Opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and not necessarily the opinions of Jazz 91.9 or Clark Atlanta University.
Welcome to The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. This weekly public affairs program features dialogue and community engagement with leaders and organizations making a difference in the areas we serve.
Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. An election day, the last day to vote in this historic election, is in a few days, and we'll be able to look at the results instead of the polls. I reached out to Theron Johnson, a Democratic political analyst from the Georgia Gang, to join us this morning and talk about election night. I spent the election night of 2016, believe it or not, in prayer with a group of African-American spiritual leaders that were rounded up by my girlfriend Melanie Few, who created the Super Bowl gospel celebration. And I know people are trying to figure out, you know, where are we going to be this year? What are we going to do this year as the polls begin to close? So, Theron, I hope you can give us some insight as to what we should look for, and I want to welcome you to The Local Take.
It is so good to be here, and thank you so much for this invitation. Early voting in the state of Georgia is over now, and so for those of you that have not had an opportunity to vote, please, please, please go to your polling location early on Tuesday, November 3rd. And if you have any questions, you know, there are many, many websites out there where you can check your voter status, make sure that your precinct is actually the precinct that you plan to vote. That's the Secretary of State's website. And then lastly, for those of you that have been holding on to the absentee ballot, you filled out an absentee application to request that ballot, please send it in today. If not, look up where the secure drop boxes are in your county. Most counties have multiple drop boxes, but particularly in Fulton County, there's a lot in DeKalb County, Cobb County, Gwinnett, just to name a few. And so please, please make sure that if you have that absentee ballot and it's completed, that it's signed correctly, please drop it in the drop box or put it in the mail today. But I think the lines on Tuesday will be manageable because we've seen roughly, just as of midweek of this week, roughly about 3.2 million people voting. So we're anticipating for that total to grow to 5 million by Tuesday.
And I think that is amazing. And the site that you go to check to make sure that your vote has been accepted or to find those drop boxes is mvp.sos.ga.gov. Now, this is a historic election as opposed to others simply because of the turnout across so many states. Do you think there is any way possible we will know the results on election night? You know, if Pennsylvania goes for Biden, is it over? If Florida goes for Trump, is it over? You know, what are some of the first things we should be looking at as the polls close on election night to determine if we might know anything soon?
If we end up with a Biden landslide, which looks more and more likely, then I think we will be able to call it on election night. If it's a close race where Joe Biden narrowly defeats President Trump, and I hope this doesn't happen, but it could happen where President Trump could narrowly defeat Joe Biden, then I think we would need to be prepared to go into weeks of litigation and lawyers and challenges from different groups all across the country, but particular in about 6 to 8 battleground states. And Georgia could be one of those states. But what I would just tell people is if you're supporting either candidate, you know, go out and vote. But particularly with Democrats, you know, we can't get complacent. Every single registered voter needs to go out and vote. And listen, the higher the turnout, the larger the margin for Democrats. We believe that we won't get into a back and forth sort of with litigation and lawyers and challenges and give the president of the United States an opportunity to try to claim that this election was stolen and that there was voter fraud.
Now, the polls, amazingly, actually, as you mentioned, have Georgia as a battleground state for the first time in decades. And you can tell just looking at television for a few minutes, because we are inundated, you know, with advertising. We know that polling in 2016 did not reach the rural, uneducated white voters. And supposedly the pollsters have, you know, made up for that. Can we trust these polls? I mean, you know, Quinnipiac had Biden almost 7 to 5 points ahead in what is a red state.
Well, I can tell you this. In Georgia, I've seen polls that have Joe Biden beating Donald Trump anywhere between 5 to 6 to 7 to sometimes even 9 percentage points. I can confidently say that I don't think we're beating him in Georgia by that much. However, I do believe that Joe Biden is winning Georgia by maybe 1 to 2 points right now as it stands. And if you just look at the voter turnout, particularly in Democratic stronghold counties like Gwinnett and Cobb and Fulton and, of course, DeKalb, we feel very good about that. But you're exactly right. One of the things that the polling does not poll is enthusiasm. And it's also not polling how disproportionately affected African-Americans particularly are from this COVID-19 deadly pandemic. You have a president that's trying to universally suppress the vote by discouraging people to vote by mail. Then he's telling people to vote by mail. Then he's trying to, you know, restrict and reduce funding to the U.S. Postal Service to make sure that he confuses folks that way. And so polling can sort of give you a snapshot of where we are. But that's why I said earlier, if you're a Democrat and you want Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to be the president and the next vice president of the United States of America, just don't become complacent. Please go out and vote on Tuesday.
I think Georgia probably looks like a, you know, a big shiny peach, but shouldn't they concentrate in those battleground states that they lost? Wouldn't it have better served this campaign to be in Wisconsin and Michigan this time? Are they making the same mistake that Clinton made?
No, not at all. I would tell you this. I've been working in politics for over 20 years now. I've been working in Georgia politics all of those 20 years. We have been waiting for this moment. Many people forget Georgia was a blue state 18 years ago. We were a Democratic state that had a great number of U.S. senators and members of Congress that represented us well. So for the last 18 years, we've been waiting on this moment. But to have Joe Biden in town with 7 days left to go this week in Georgia is a testament to all the hard work that we have been putting in for the last 18 years. And so this notion that he's spending time in a state that's not going to go blue is just false. Now, what I will tell you is that if you really look at the travel schedule of Joe Biden, you look at the travel schedule of Dr. Jill Biden, you look at the travel schedule of Kamala Harris and her husband, Doug Emhoff, they have traveled all around those 6 or 8 battleground states that people would like to say that these are the pivotal states. And how can we forget the most popular Democrat right now in the world? And it is former President Barack Obama, who you've seen is traveling all over the U.S. He was in Florida multiple times. He was in the Midwest. And so we have so many surrogates that are quadrupling their efforts in those key battleground states. So no, we will not make the same mistake that the Clinton campaign made in 2016. But I think Joe Biden coming to Georgia this week and standing on the stage with Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms and a host of other great candidates like Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff shows you that we have earned this moment, and he would not be in Georgia if he did not think we had a pathway to victory.
This is The Local Take, and we're speaking with Democratic political analyst Theron Johnson from the Georgia Gang about Tuesday's election. Now, people always talk about the young vote, and surprisingly, in these early voting days, the millennials have showed out. They have stood in line. They are early voting. Do you think this trend is going to continue on Election Day? Are millennials making their voices heard in this cycle?
Absolutely. You know, amongst, I think, almost 2 in 3 And that's roughly about 60% of the millennials or ages 18 to 29 who have voted so far didn't even vote in 2016. So let me repeat that. Roughly what we're seeing, 2 in 3 of the 63% of millennials, and those ages range between 18 and 29, that have voted thus far, 63% of them did not even vote in 2016. And so that's a confluence of, I believe, Democrats doing our job, making sure that these 238,000 extra young voters have voted so far. But also, I think they're now able to really take all of this enthusiasm, this peaceful protesting that we've been seeing in cities all over the country, but particularly in Atlanta. And now they're taking that passion and that momentum and that enthusiasm, and they're turning out to vote. And so it took some of these sort of unfortunate murders by Black men and women unarmed by white police officers when people, particularly young people, got involved and peacefully protested all across this country. So I'm very happy to see that many of these young people, but not all, are probably peaceful protesters who want to continue their mission towards electing the right people to offices such as, President of the United States and members of Congress and Vice President and U.S. Senators. And so I believe this trend will continue. And I believe that finally in Atlanta, particularly, and at the Atlanta University Center, where I'm a proud graduate of Clark Atlanta University, is we're starting to see young people refuse to be ignored, and they're turning out and voting in droves. And I believe that they will be a huge demographic of voters that both parties are going to have to figure out how they cater to as we move forward in this election process.
Theron, I hope that means that they're developing a healthy voting habit.
Yes, exactly. And look, what we've known for a long time is that we had unbelievable numbers in 2008 and 2012 when President Barack Obama was on the ticket. And I think he spent an enormous amount of time and resources cultivating the young vote. But young people, you know, they're less partisan as far as their commitment to a particular party. They're more issue oriented. They're more focused on the issues that drive them, like climate change, like economic stability, ending wage stagnation, making sure that they can have access to quality and affordable health care and infrastructure. These are things that a lot of these young millennials care deeply about. And I believe that the Biden-Harris campaign really is appealing to them because we speak directly to those issues that they care about.
Now, you've alluded to this, and Democrats have been saying, you know, we need a big win so that the court is not involved. If the win is similar to 2016, where Clinton was about 2% of the popular vote but wasn't able to bring the Electoral College, if this is a close race and the courts are going to be the ones to decide, you know, what happens, how does that scenario play out if it comes to pass?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, the only way I can see the courts getting involved is if the Electoral College results hinges on a single state, like it did in 2000 with Florida. However, with the most disliked, I believe, unpopular president in our history, I don't anticipate this being another Gore versus Bush moment for us in this country. That was a very close election. That was a nail biter. However, we can't put anything past this president. You know, Trump will, of course, challenge the results, I believe, no matter what happens, regardless of whether he loses by 10 electoral votes or he loses by 50. Losing by such a narrow margin is the most concerning scenario because, as we know, he just got an opportunity to put a Supreme Court justice, his pick on the justice. And so now that's at stake with, you know, a lot of his allies having, you know, what they think they need on the courts right now. But ultimately, I believe that the voters of the United States of America, and particularly the voters of Georgia, are fed up with what they've been experiencing the last 4 years. And I believe that they will show up and show out in big numbers, and we will win this race.
Theron, I don't even want to say this out loud, but if by chance the Democrats are able to pull off a wave election with, say, 8 to 9% of the vote ahead of the incumbent's campaign, does this mean that the courts will have less of a chance to get involved? Will this be seen as a mandate? And, you know, how likely do you think this wave election, the myth, you know, the unicorn, how likely do you think it might happen?
Again, you know, Joe Biden has been very specific that he doesn't want to get into talking about the courts. And, you know, I can't talk about that either because, you know, he's pretty much made that an official stance on the campaign. However, I just truly believe, while we are all concerned about making sure that we have a democratic process, that the true pillars and principles of a democracy will be on display with this voting season, that I believe the American people, we're going to do what we were supposed to do to try to avoid any chaos or, you know, unrest that will come after these election results. But, you know, again, if we get to a point where the courts have to get involved, you and I will be having a different conversation, and then we'll be able to kind of play out those scenarios.
This is The Local Take, and we're speaking with Democratic political analyst Theron Johnson from the Georgia Gang about Tuesday's election. Now, Roosevelt, when he won with a mandate. They flipped the Senate and the House. If the Democratic campaign wins the White House and keeps the House but doesn't flip the Senate, is it going to be, you know, those Obama years all over again where nothing can get done because the Senate won't do its job?
Well, you make a really good point, and that's a perfect segue into us spending a few seconds on, I believe, two races in Georgia right now that are not getting a lot of attention that they should, but it's so important. And that is that we have two U.S. Senate races going on right here in Georgia. We have John Ossoff, who's going against David Perdue. David Perdue is the incumbent Republican U.S. Senator. And John Ossoff, in many polls, and just based on the enthusiasm that I feel on the ground traveling the state, is, you know, got a good chance of beating David Perdue and possibly making it to a runoff. And in the second race, we have 21 people running in what we call a special primary. A lot of people like to refer to it as a jungle primary. But the incumbent in that race is Senator Kelly Loeffler, but she's being really challenged aggressively by one of her Republican colleagues, Congressman Doug Collins. And then on the Democratic side, Pastor Raphael Warnock, who I believe has become the consensus Democrat just based on the resources that he's been able to raise, the resources he's spending, and the campaign that he's running. And so it's highly likely that that race will definitely go to a runoff. And I believe Raphael Warnock will succeed in being a person that will make it to that runoff. What we have to wait and see is which Republican will make the runoff. So if Georgia is in a situation where we have two U.S. Senate runoffs in our state, the balance of power in the U.S. Senate, particularly if Democrats will control the U.S. Senate or Republicans will control the U.S. Senate, will come down to early January in Georgia. I think that date is January 5th. We will decide who will control the U.S. Senate. And so that's why these elections in Georgia right now, down ballot, are so important. And also, we can't forget we got two competitive congressional races with incumbent Congresswoman Lucy Metcalf, who's running for re-election. And you also have Democrat Carolyn Bordeaux, who came very, very close to defeating Congressman Rob Woodall last time around, who is in Congressional District 7.
This is going to be a wild night. If there was one thing you want our listeners to know about election night, one thing that you would share with, you know, friends and colleagues, what is that one thing that you're telling folks?
I would just tell people to be patient. You know, please, first and foremost, make sure that the night before the election, if you have family members, siblings, church members, coworkers, colleagues, anybody that you care deeply about, please just pick up the phone and or send them a text and make sure they voted. And then once the polls close in Georgia, particularly, we're going to have some probably challenges. You know, it's technology. There will probably be some voter irregularities. What I hope doesn't happen is this blatant attempts by people to try to suppress the vote. And so I would just tell people to be patient, be optimistic. I believe that we have leaders that are doing everything they can to make sure that this election season will end the right way. And also just be prepared for a possible long journey if the election results are close. But if they're not close, and hopefully Joe Biden will win by a great number, then we got to get to work as a Black community, because then it's what's next. You know, what do we do from here? So many of us, we actually just focus on election night, and then we just disappear and go on about our lives, and we don't show up again until the next year or the year after that. And we want to sort of express all of our frustration. We in this community that you serve in this radio station, we've got to make sure we have a November 4th and beyond plan in place. And so while the election night is extremely important, it's preeminent, I would say what's also paramount is that we have a plan as a people to start holding these elected officials accountable that starts on November 4th.
And I'm going to give everyone the number for voting hotline. It is 866-OUR-VOTE. And I always wonder why our voting commissioners don't come out now and let people know that if they're in line to vote and the polls close, that they're supposed to stay in line. That is pretty much a given, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And also we want to tell people that if you get to the line and you have not voted absentee, bring that ballot with you. One of the things that we're trying to cut down is on the check-in process, to just let the person know, the poll worker who is working very hard to try to move the line as expeditiously as possible. But if you have that absentee ballot and you chose to show up on election day, bring that ballot with you because it'll reduce the check-in process. And then lastly, if for some reason you changed your name, or maybe you went to the wrong voting precinct, or maybe your voter registration form didn't process quick enough, they still have to allow you to vote a provisional ballot. A provisional ballot must be given to anyone who stood in line, he or she, that has been registered to vote, but maybe for whatever reason at the wrong site, or there may be some type of challenge, but ask for a provisional ballot. And that way we can make sure that you at least have an opportunity to vote. And then if for some reason you need to bring your ID back or prove your residency with an identification document or a driver's license or something, you have 3 days after the election to make sure that you get that information to your local county register, voter registration and elections office, to make sure that your vote is counted.
Now, Theron, you've already mentioned that you're a graduate of Clark Atlanta University, but share with us, how did this become your passion?
Oh, man, let's just focus on Clark Atlanta. When I got to Clark Atlanta in 1996, I came there on a football scholarship and an academic scholarship. And, you know, I played football for 3 years and then realized in my senior year, I'm not going to the NFL. And so there were great professors that I had at Clark Atlanta University. But Dr. Thomas Cole Jr., who is my hero, who doesn't get the credit he deserves for being Clark Atlanta University's first president, really helped me understand, you know, what I need to do next. And he's a good alpha man. I'm an alpha man of Alpha Phi chapter at Clark Atlanta University. And so my passion really was developed at CAU when I met Bill Campbell in 1997 when he was running for reelection. Him and Marvin Arrington Jr., Marvin Arrington, came over to Clark Atlanta University to campaign. I remember meeting them. And so when I graduated, I just immediately wanted to serve. I wanted to help create laws that was going to change people's lives for the better. And so Bill Campbell gave me a job right out of Clark Atlanta University. And, you know, we could be here all day long because I got fired by Mayor Franklin. And I always tell her that was the best and worst thing that could happen to me. But, my passion for politics really was my experience at Clark Atlanta University. And, you know, our motto, find a way or make one, is something that I live by every single day. And through service and hard work and a lot of prayer, I've been very fortunate to do very well in the city and work for some great elected officials.
Well, I've always loved it. Find a way or make a way. So, Theron, thank you so much. Look, we might reach back out to you after the election just to get a recap.
Anytime. And thank you so much for what you do every single day for our community.
The Local Take with Kiplin Primus on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is produced by Kiplin Primus, Jami Wellman, and Rob Maynard for WCLK. If you have comments about today's program or suggestions for future programs, you can leave a voicemail at 404-880-6211 or email kiplinprimus@gmail.com. You can listen to these interviews on demand at WCLK.com or via the WCLK app. Thanks for listening.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures, a stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college. This is beyond a simple donation. It's the opportunity for America to invest in its kids and take an active stake in the future of the country. The return on your investment isn't money. What you get back is knowing you protected our potential. So one day, that potential can grow up to become surgeons and architects, executives and engineers, people who can change the future just by being a part of it. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. A public service announcement brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
This message presented as a public service by WCLK.